Station number 14978, Charles Turnbull, reel 17.
Mr. Turnbull, reel 17. Fighting in Normandy, Mr. Turnbull, what type of terrain were you finding yourselves in and the difficulties that that was giving you?
Well, the difficulties were that really, instead of open country, what we found was that the terrain was the likes of small fields surrounded by high hedgerows, and under the close situation where we weren't very far from the German troops, for the patrolling activity, etc., it was quite rather frightening for patrols going out owing to the closeness that really one could rather expect to find in the high trees and behind the hedgerows, which were good positions for German snipers, that one found that when the patrol activity was taking place, when the patrols returned, you normally found that the men were in a state of a nervous state, I would say, and more or less perspiring heavily. It was rather a frightening situation that one never knew what to expect behind the hedgerows, etc. I think one can understand how men felt when you couldn't see for a long distance ahead. That was the situation at that time. And of course, even the troops who were dug in slits and that sort of thing, one found that really were dead cattle, and also bodies were lying around. The stench, etc., was really, should I say, obnoxious. And it wasn't a very pleasant situation to be in at all.
How were men coping with this? Because you've mentioned the tremendous stress of patrolling and being in the line. Did this drain them more quickly than probably in a more open warfare situation, more open ground?
Well, I would say that really it didn't really drain them to that great extent, because one wasn't faced at that period with sort of a direct frontal assault. It was more small skirmishes and how to offset the problem of dealing with snipers. But because what one found was, at that time, really, the opposing forces consisted a lot of the younger type of German who, when prisoners were brought in or one came in contact with them, they were quite fanatical with the reproach that the Nazism and the worship, I would say, of Adolf Hitler had really been ingrained into them. But I would say that really it wasn't like direct frontal combat, that really, although casualties were sustained, they weren't as heavy as where one had to do frontal assaults.
Is there a method or methods of dealing with snipers in those conditions? Did you find some way of dealing with them relatively effectively?
Well, all I could say is that really our riflemen, who were really good shots, were placed so that they had to try and find out exactly what position they were occupying and try and bring them down from the positions that they were occupying.
You mentioned patrolling. Did you do any patrolling?
Not a lot, but there was the odd occasion, mainly if a lieutenant was available, he was the man who took the patrols out. But there was an occasions when no officers were available, and either a sergeant, and very occasionally a sergeant major, took the patrol out. But it was mainly either a lieutenant or a sergeant if available. If not, then it fell upon the sergeant major to take a patrol out.
How large might the average patrol be?
Normally about 6 or probably 7, 6 or 7 men.
What would be their task?
To try and locate the exact positions of what the Germans were occupying, and if possible, bring back prisoners to gain intelligence which would be useful to our officers who were back at headquarters, and also information for the brigade commander to digest, etc.
How did the men take to being asked or ordered to go on patrol? Were the people who were enthusiastic and others extremely reluctant, or were the patrol types and others that weren't in that way, they weren't that kind of person?
Well, I would say it was a thing that was accepted. It was part of the duties, and if one was picked to go out, not a very pleasant situation, but it was a task that had to be undertaken like everything else in the army.
Were they briefed before they went?
Oh yes, you always had a briefing by the company commander of what was expected.
Were there day patrols as well as night patrols?
Mainly night patrols.
And were they blacked up and so forth too?
Not really.
Camouflage. Did you use camouflage in the fighting situation?
Camouflage was used, naturally, to tone with the surrounding countryside.
How good or clever were the Germans in using this terrain?
In my opinion, very good. They had been trained very well indeed. And although at that time it was the younger type of German we were coming in contact with, in my opinion, they had been trained very well indeed. And as I've said previously, quite fanatical. That they thought at that time, and I would say even up to the end of the war, they still thought that in the end, Germany would come out supreme.
What support were you getting in the in this situation? Were tanks coming in to help you through?
Well, at this period, it still wasn't suitable tank country. The everything was so close that it wasn't suitable country for tanks to manoeuvre.
So it was infantry country?
In my opinion, yes.
Where did you go to after Saint-Pierre?
Well, we moved forward and then we were coming into really more or less the area round about Tilly. We'd advanced and we were occupying this area until orders had been given to attempt to advance further. That really, it was a little bit stalemate at this time.
Had you received drafts to make up for your losses?
We had received new drafts coming in.
Where were they coming from?
Well, not DLI, it was mainly from other battalions who had sent reinforcements in to make up the battalion again and the company up to company strength.
What was their quality like? Were they good?
Pretty good, really. They settled in quite well, and there again, it was a new experience from then, and I think they did appreciate that they were coming into good battalions that had been tested, and they were mixed in into the platoons and the companies, whereby it wasn't an exact new formation. They were intermingled and settled in quite well. One thing that we did learn to avoid, if there was any sort of existing buildings or farmhouses or anything like that, one soon learned to avoid such places, as normally places like that were registered by German artillery and that sort of thing, that you were quick to learn on how to approach different situations. It was a case of trying to become adaptable to any form of countryside, whether it was hilly or wooded. And we've already mentioned where the hedgerows were high, what to expect, that one could be, if you were travelling along probably a roadway or something like that, it was quite common for a sniper to be behind a hedgerow, and one became wary of such things, especially when one found that probably a body would be lying on one side of the road. And it gave indication of what had happened previously. I might say at this time as well that initially, when one first of all saw British troops being killed, it made one feel really quite upset to find British bodies lying around. And one felt at that time, well, we've got to see that these people are given some sort of a little burial or something to be done later on, rather than just see them lying there. But after a while, it became quite commonplace, and one became, should I say, used to the situation and tended to disregard these things. There was a thing that was going to become quite commonplace and happening, well, very, very frequently. And this idea of, right, when we were in England, people who you'd become friendly with and hated the idea of losing them, the situation had now become when it was a situation that had to be expected and one couldn't do very much about it. And I suppose the feeling crept in, well, what is going to happen in the future? Is it going to be my turn next? And you had to be the type of person who really tended to disregard that mode of thought and just get on with the job. But it was pretty obvious that some people were made that way and some weren't. And what could one do about it if it was your makeup and tended to be a little of a nervous disposition? That person couldn't be faulted for that, which I think that really the thinking non-commissioned officer and also the officer type, really he tended to be of an understanding nature. And this business of bawling and shouting at people was really now a thing of the past. And one tended to be more of an encouraging nature to that type of a person.
What ways could you use to encourage someone who, as you say, had a nervous disposition or looked like breaking down under the circumstances?
I would say that one had to be the type who understood the situation and gave that person all the encouragement he possibly could and moved amongst that type more than what he would with the other person and tended to have a leaning towards them. And one found that if you adopted that friendly spirit, that person seemed to recover more than what I've said previously, being bawled and shouted at. In my opinion, that didn't work.
Did you appeal to their loyalty to their mates, the rest of the unit?
Well, even the private soldier, I think he had the feeling the same as what mine was, that was the best method. And should I say that they tended to become more of mates within the company and the platoons. If one showed a little bit apprehension, he was the person they had to lean to. And even in the private soldier, the makeup of everybody was different. You had the strong type who, in my opinion, were born to be leaders, should I say, and they could set example.
Were you able to spot someone who was beginning to get into this condition a little in advance and do something about it early?
Well, I would say 110 did to get that sort of an impression and could sense it, and one attempted to talk to them.
What would you be saying to them?
In my opinion, not attend on the nervous aspect of the thing, to be more of an encouraging nature and speak about other things, anything to get the minds off the actual job. More or less the conversation could be probably to look on the bright side and try and get one's mind to be work in a different direction, that things would improve as we went along, not to try and speak despondently about anything.
That person that would surely, even if they got through one activity that was immediately ahead of them that was worrying them, was going to go through it again and again and again, would they not? So that you'd be following this pattern all the way through with that person.
Yes, that was the form that I wouldn't say that he improved, but should I say that really he learned to really probably accept the situation, that not much could be done about it, and eventually that really I would say that he had the feeling in the end that he shouldn't let his mates down.
Close contact with his immediate friends would be important.
Very important. And as time went on, I would say that the experience tended to be where people clung to each other more. Nobody was an outsider. And everybody had the little bit jokes about this, that and the other, and tended to accept the situation and try to discount the adversities of the situation. And there again, we had been told before we left England, whether it was right or wrong, that really after this initial assault and gains had been made, that really the British forces expected, after all the training and all the that they'd had in England, that after a period of time probably the brigade would be returned to England, and that wouldn't involve a great long period, but that turned out to be rather a fallacy. That I think the reaction initially was that probably the brigade or the division would have such a hard time that they would be smashed up, and really the remnants would be brought back to England to reorganise. Whether I'm right in saying that or not, I don't know. And whether that little bit tended to sustain the men, thinking that after they'd done so much, that might happen eventually. So whether that was some form of encouragement or not, I don't know.
How important was humour in tight situations? The British soldier tends to have a reputation of getting some humour out of anything. Mm. Did you find this to be the case?
Yes, I would say so, really. The man who would crack a joke, there again, one always found that there was always that type of person around. Some people are humorous in their outlook and can see the funny side of a situation. There again, it's all the makeup of a person. But one found that in a company that there were always this type of personality who tended to be really a good person to have around.
And they would tend to ease the atmosphere within the unit. Is that
yes,
so?
One found that was the case.
As a CSM and of course having your lieutenant or company commander as well, were you also told to keep an eye out for people who were showing signs of cracking, so you could do something early rather than see something happen?
No, I would say that we weren't really told anything about that. worn as a company sergeant major. As I've said previously, in my opinion, if you were born to be a leader, I think you either were or you weren't. And you could see the situation around you. And my opinion was that the more that you mixed with the men, that really you were looked upon as a person who was respected. And whatever orders were given were taken as given and acted upon. And if a man had a problem, he knew that really he could come and have a chat to you about it and would be accepted in the right spirit that had been given.
How important was religion to a person in difficult and dangerous areas like this?
I would say that really, I think really it did come into it quite a bit, but an individual didn't talk about it a lot. He tended more to keep it to himself, probably in case he thought that it wouldn't go down very well with his mates round about. But I think in his quiet moments, it was thought about quite a lot. And especially if the pardo was around, that really he was looked upon as a person who, if necessary, they could confide in. But the ordinary soldier, he didn't talk about it to his mates. I mean, I did quote an example where when we were in France, that I had the feeling that we wouldn't get out of Gondicourt. And being quite young, one felt that one could think of a religious nature and pray to God at that time for help. And probably one didn't talk about it to anybody else. And I think that generally this was the type of approach that the ordinary soldier came to. It was something that inside of him, he thought about it and did something in his quiet moments, but he wouldn't openly talk about it.
Did you feel quite often as you went through various actions yourself personally that your God was important to you in a very personal way?
I would say that my feelings were eventually that I just became immune to it all. Eventually I had the feeling that really if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I soon learned that really, right, one attempted, as time went on, one attempted to obey the rules and regulations that you'd been told about on how to approach a different situation. But I soon learned that really, it worked to a certain extent. But I began to feel as though, whether I'm right or wrong in saying this, that fate came into the situation. That my opinion was you were either going to come through or you weren't going to come through. And I felt that when coming to these combat situations, all that one could do was whatever order had been given, you had to go on and try and overcome the situation. That one didn't know when something of an unlucky situation was going to happen whereby something would drop, and you were either wounded or you were killed, and as I say, it was a situation whereby you tended to accept it, and it was either your makeup or it wasn't. And I would say that I became of that nature whereby I had the feeling that really whatever happened will be, and get on with the job, and you couldn't do anything about it.